not the only one that that when we cross, but why is it going to be deducted from our taxes?
Ms. Hogan?
I'm just going to address my questions to the whole panel because there were two lawyers testifying, and I don't know if they object to being cross-examined, but anyone who wants to answer should feel free. There was some testimony that the
Could you speak up, Ms. Hogan, so we can all really hear you loud and clear?
There's some testimony that the state board staff reviewed the construction contracts and approved them. Did anyone from the state board ever represent that stopping progress on the construction would not violate the state board loan agreement?
I had no communication at my office to that effect.
Mr. Chair, I can offer on that. I can answer that question if you'd like.
No, anybody at your table can answer that question.
I can answer that question.
Yeah, and you're Mr. Bleski.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
The contract language as provided by the ISA with the construction contracts incorporated by reference provides for changes. And
well, that wasn't my question. My question was, did anybody at the state board ever say that it wasn't a violation of the loan agreement to stop the construction progress for a timeout?
To say that it was a violation of the contract?
Did they say that it was not a violation of the state board loan?
No, they said that it was. But it is a contractual remedy, plain as day, in language written by them.
To follow up on that. Doesn't that language refer to site conditions such as archaeological finds?
No. Let me read the chapter and verse on that in the ISA. It's actually under the notifications clause. By the way, this knowing contracts this way well makes you really not invited to parties, but I'll try to be brief.
Mr. Bleski, just thinking about before when we allowed Mr. Briggs to answer for Mr. Thompson, it was because Mr. Thompson had made some statements. This is on cross-examination. Mr. Seitz doesn't have any knowledge, I think, of the question itself that was posed to him.
But
so I didn't want to open this up.
But I think Ms. Oaken's questions are going to issues that I didn't testify to, but we're perfectly willing to respond to them.
Yeah, but I think maybe Mr. Bleski should be your next witness after maybe they're done cross-examining you.
Yes.
Not that you don't have the time to do it, but
actually, I'll be going over these and can answer those.
Okay.
That's actually what I'll be talking about.
Right.
Well, maybe it would make more sense for them to finish their presentation before we start cross-examination, because it seems like they're doing a package presentation.
What time is your meeting at 7?
That's up to you.
I would rather
do
that.
Huh? Okay, are you finished asking questions of Mr. Seitz?
Yeah. No, I'd rather hold off. I'd rather hold all the cross-examination until they're finished with their presentation,
Mr. Chairman,
it sounds like they're going to address some of this.
Can I make a recommendation that maybe we consider adjourning? I mean, it is 6:20. I think that the expectation, I may be wrong on this, I'll let Lisa talk to it, but the expectation of the community is that they're going to have a meeting at 7.
What I asked is, you had mentioned 7:45. If we could adjourn at 7 or 7:15, that'd be great. We have people waiting, but we can make a call. And we'll start at 8 instead of 7. We'd like to finish our presentation if we could. But if we won't be able to.
When did you notice this board meeting tonight? Was that just last night?
Yes, sir. And we do have a call, the ability to call, and we have, it's a special meeting, and we structured the notice as such that it's predicated on the adjourning of this meeting 1 hour later, and we have communications.
Did anyone from the Water Board give you any indication that we would be adjourning at any specific time?
We thought you folks were civil.
No.
I'm being a little flippant there, but you know, typically courts close at 4:35. I mean, this is fine with me. I'm flexible, but yeah. I was not under the expectation that we were going to.
Actually, I know your CSD goes into the wee hours of the morning, and I figured stopping by 7:45 was early for you guys. So I didn't think anything of it. But
we've provided for any anticipated change that your board may need.
Okay, let me just check in here. We could stop at 7:15.
I don't know.
Gary, you say no? Let me just go down the line.
Yeah,
okay, no.
I mean, we're going to 7:45. You know, normally on a case like this, we go to 11, 12 o'clock in some cases.
Okay.
So we're only stopping at 7:45 for one reason, and that's because we're losing our quorum. And that's the only reason. If you guys, you know, notice a hearing or notice a meeting thinking you're going to get out of here at a certain time, I don't think that's good. I mean, first of all, you should have come and asked someone at the board and said, what time do you think we're going to get out of there, rather than just basing it on your experiences in the past.
Yeah, okay. That's fine. I'm raising the issue as a matter of convenience, not as a matter of...
We were hoping to get through this tonight.
Let me just check in with the rest of my board. Russ?
Pardon?
Do you want to continue to 7:45 or stop at 7:15?
No, I want to go as long as we possibly can, because what it'll do is just... I don't want to get home.
That's perfectly fine. 7:45 is great. Let's go.
Okay. All right.
But I want to ask Mr. Sykes a question.
Go ahead.
Mr. Sykes, you just don't leave. I was trying to recollect when you made a statement that on the time schedule, that there's been hearsay or so forth, that the time schedule was the CSD's time schedule.
Yes.
And I was at that meeting when they came forth with that time schedule, and it was the CSD's time schedule, and I think I asked the question, are you sure that this time schedule is adequate? And I can ask Mr. Buell, because I think he's the one who presented that time schedule to this board. And I think at that particular time, I chaired this board. And I wanted to be assured that we didn't have any delays, that we gave him enough time, and that the time schedule would meet the requirements, but yet give him enough time to do it in case there was delays. Because I've been through this before, not only with Los Osos, but my former life as a mayor. And I understand how government moves, slowly, mysteriously, and some people don't understand why. So I don't want you to have the idea that it was our board or our staff time schedule, but that's what you were kind of alluding to.
No, what I was trying to allude to, and thank you for correcting me, was is that that time schedule was a compromise through negotiations, and wasn't that the district did not have the luxury of saying, the board saying to the district, write down what you think you need, and then we'll come in here and we'll approve it. That's what I'm trying to point out is that
Mr. Sykes,
yes,
this board is the one that approved it.
I agree.
The staff only recommended that we approve it. We're the ones that make the final decision.
I agree.
And the question was asked to the CSD at that particular time, is this an appropriate time schedule? And the answer was yes. If there was any question at that particular time, they could have raised it, and we could have either accepted it or not accepted it. But what you kind of put out there to the general public was, It wasn't your time schedule. Well, I just want to correct you. It was your time schedule.
Okay. And since I wasn't at that meeting, I'm certainly happy to accept it without challenge your testimony as to what occurred.
We can
there.
Ask Mr. Buell.
Well, it doesn't matter to me one okay. way or the other. My All point right. that I was trying to make is that that time schedule order was negotiated as opposed to the district giving a time. And the only reason why I want to say this, and the facts bear it out, if that was the hunky-dory, sorry, I don't want to be flippant, if that was such a time order that was agreed to by the district, there would have been no time or no reason to have filed a request to the State Water Resources Control Board to hold it in abeyance. So I just want to, I don't want to be contradictory, and I certainly don't want to be argumentative with the board. But if I mistestified, I'm glad I was corrected.
Can I just say one thing to correct the record on the procedure of a state board petition?
Yes.
The district didn't request the state board to hold the time schedule order in abeyance. What they did was file a petition to challenge the time schedule order, and rather than pursue that challenge, they agreed to hold their petition in abeyance. The regional board doesn't have any ability to agree or disagree to that. So basically, it's like a lawsuit that was filed that's just been sitting there. The time schedule order has never been put in abeyance. It's never been stayed, and the state board has never ruled on or considered the petition because the district asked them not to. So the abeyance refers not to the time schedule order but to the petition.
And I agree with that.
All right. Could I just ask Mr. Buell if anything that Ms. Okun just said or Mr. Jeffries had said you would correct in any way?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bruce Buell with LOCSD. I think it's important for the record to note that the district objected to the proposal to impose a time schedule order. We requested that your board not adopt that order, but we did concur with the timeline by board order, and I'd like the record to note that it's consistent with the state revolving fund time deadlines, the milestones that were built into the state revolving fund loan at that time.
So the state water board had its own requirements.
That's correct. Our board had gone to the state water resources control board to resurrect the loan that had previously been assigned to the county. In doing so, the state water resources control board not only assigned the new loan or transferred the loan to the district, but they created a timeline that we were obligated to follow. And in the discussion with your staff, that is the same timeline that was published in Time Schedule Order 00131.
Okay, thank you. All right. Where are we? Mr. Bleski?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
We just have one little slide for you.
Okay. Clock is resuming right now. Ah, looks like Art Baggett.
Chairman Young, members of the board, first of all, thank you for having us here and listening to what we have to say. I hope I can bring my experience to bear and doing what the right thing is. I've got 29 years of experience in civil service. I'm a professional engineer in the state of California, a water treatment plant operator level 3. Served as a surveyor. I've got 6.5 years of active duty in the civil engineer corps, 17 years in the reserves. I've had command over units that now are in Iraq, of organizations over 650 construction crews supporting the Fleet Marine Force. I constructed, sited hundreds of miles of pipeline roads, airfields, warehouses, water treatment plant facilities, you name it. I've been out there doing it with folks for a long time. Some of my expertise is and my interests are seismic lifeline engineering, survivability of water facilities in seismic events. I'm a federal warrant level 2 contracts officer, I've been expert witness both for the federal government and others in front of the 10th Circuit Court for the appeal of government contracts. And that's my experience, and we're going to start. The first thing we'd like to start about is we're going to be talking about some of the things regarding local control in our contract.
How to do this, what the local community wants. That is a prerogative of the local government. If you have a problem with the project, this has only happened twice in the 6 years I've been here, where people have tried to use this board to get around their own local government's decision. Only twice. No comments. So the remedy is at that local government, not before this board.
So what we have here is on September 27th, the Los Osos Community Services District changed its government. What I'm going to be speaking about is there's one thing I'm going to be speaking about, and that's addressed in the post-elections contract actions. I'm not going to be talking about the pre-election actions of the state revolving fund and those things that happened that led up to the events of September 27th. That means I'm not going to be talking about the proper securitization of the loan or the state's failure to enact security other than insisting on revenues for a future construction project that was in peril due to a recall and an initiative that would have recited that project.
Now you said you're not going to talk about those things. Okay.
That's what I'm not going to talk about, but I'll answer questions. Or about the state's failure to provide even the minimum reasonable oversight. And this all has to go with the the issues that are post-election and doing with contracts. I'm not going to talk about we wouldn't be even be here today if even the minimum oversight in what I would expect to be reasonable oversight would have occurred prior to the election. So we have a number of periods here. We have three contracts out there, one that was encumbered by Measure B, and that's the Tri-W contract. To build at that site would have either initiated a temporary restraining order or some type of legal action, and that influenced the contract decisions that needed to be made. However, the ISA by the SRF that was approved and in pretty much in language created by the state and all the construction contracts which are incorporated by reference into that document, the ATA, and just about every other, and including the language of Measure B, there were contractual remedies compatible with Measure B that would have allowed the entire project to move forward, including the relocation of that treatment plant. This project is scoped, it's scoped not as a treatment plant and pipes, it's scoped as a system. And when you have a situation that's provided for in the ISA where a component of the system, and this happens all the time, has to be relocated, you have language there. If it was not the state's intent to provide that contractual remedy, then why did they put the language in the contract? So on 9/27 we had an election, and we pretty much know the outcome of that. On October 3rd, the prudent thing to do was initiate a suspension, not a termination, not a stop notice, as according to Section 15.1 in the construction contracts, to assess what work on the collection system could continue and was compatible with any site out of town. That was a good engineering decision and also a good business decision, and it utilized the tools available and approved by the state. On October 3rd or 4th, we were notified of a lawsuit regarding seeking a remedy to restart the work at the Tri-W site. With that in mind, and considering that on 6 October the ACL was issued, contractually we were looking at already restarting the work. Now, we hadn't gotten that out yet to our contractors, and I'm specifically referring to the collection contractors at that time, because we got busy because we were going to be in court. How that influenced us was twofold. One is on Tri-W, we knew that we faced court action. On the collection system, we wanted to get going. We weren't quite ready to get going. But when we were noticed with that hearing, it would not have been prudent, and it would have been a waste of taxpayers' money to start the contractor up, demobilize him, and start again if we had a court, if we had some type of an order preventing us from building at Tri-W. So we went on Friday, October the 7th, in San Luis Obispo County Superior Court, and we addressed that challenge to restarting at the Tri-W site, and the CSD, in light of Measure B still being considered the law of the land, the work at the Tri-W site was allowed to not start. On October 10th, we had, with the cooperation of Bernard Construction and Whitaker Contractors, we went in and they were already had looked at what areas of the collection system, as designed, could be constructed through January so that we could maintain progress on the collection system. Keeping in mind, something we don't have up here is we had two scheduled paths. The critical path was the collection system. That's a 720-day duration. The treatment plant is a 550-day, I think it's, what, 720 or 730 for the pipes, 550 days for the treatment plant. But the entire schedule was front-loaded. However, and that was had to do with getting the most work in the dirt to make the most progress, which is not prudent construction contracting. However, you're going to find that when it comes to scheduling, that 180 days of float, if you challenge that in court, and it's been my experience on innumerable times, float goes to who gets it first. So with the changes clause in the contracts and the float available, that the start of that treatment plant could have been delayed 180 days and still finished on time. The state SRF folks have not chosen to use those contractual remedies. On October 11th, when we were looking at it at the staff level, we were considering the termination, because of Measure B, we were considering the termination of the Tri-W project. Termination isn't just something that we can go into and shut a contractor off. Anybody that knows, when you get into a termination, you've got a change condition on the contract. Doesn't matter what the reason is, but even if you want to terminate it for convenience, you have to enter into negotiations full and open with that contractor. To do otherwise is not fair and reasonable, and it's not in good faith. All those things were going through our mind when I made a courtesy call to Ed Moore, and it put into motion a whole series of events where we were accused of breach, and where now we are not in material breach, and we're going to make that case with the state. We filed a claim yesterday. We've held that claim. We were authorized to make that claim well in advance of the events that transpired on October 17th, and that was the negotiations through Sam Blakeslee, Assemblyman Blakeslee. We held that as good faith, and the events that happened to that were somewhat distressing. That's why I have now invoked our right. We also believe we have federal rights because federal monies are involved. On October 17th, of course, we know that about the negotiations. That's in the record. The SRF staff, especially the executive officer, issued a letter with 9 conditions and asking for approving structured negotiations if our board was willing to accept those. If our board was willing to accept those 9 conditions, and we did, we agreed to that. So we entered into those. And I got to tell you, within an hour after the state team, especially Darren Pohemus, we made a lot of progress. It was good. I mean, I can't say enough about the guy. We had a rapport, and it wasn't easy. He's not an easy guy to get along with sometimes. He's tough, he's smart, and he knows what he's doing.
Mr. Bleski, did you think that Mr. Pohemus was representing the state board itself, the board members?
Yes, sir. And the reason why I believe that is because staff, I know my staff or myself, am allowed to enter into negotiations subject to approval by the board. And that was represented to us at that meeting. It's in the letter.
And were his negotiations or were the things he agreed to subject to approval by his board?
Yes, sir, they were.
Okay. Well, this is probably why we need to be able to get him on the phone tomorrow, Cheryl and Ms. Hoken, so that we can maybe get any of that cleared up. Go ahead.
Do you want to take five?
He's trying to fix it.
Okay.
All right.
Do we want to take five or what? That's that good old technology failure.
Switch failed? Do you want to take 5 minutes to get that straightened out? Okay. Why don't we do that?
How much time is left?
All right, Michael Thomas, where is he? Mr. Packer, do we know where Michael Thomas is? Okay. Oh, we'll continue without him. Okay. All right, Mr. Blesky, is he? Okay.
Mr. Chair, while
yes.
we're waiting for Mr. Blesky to return, we could skip forward to Rob Miller. Is that okay?
Pardon me?
We could skip forward to Mr. Miller. Would that be all right? Or
sure.
Wait?
Sure.
I don't want to waste time.
Okay.
Okay.
Your seat there. Oh, this is good.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are ready to begin.
And
my name is Robert Miller, and I'm the district engineer. I'm with the Wallace Group, a local consulting firm. We've been the district engineer since 1999, and also we're the assessment engineer for the County of San Luis Obispo, so we do have some history with the project. Primarily just going to provide some technical data and a few map overlays here this evening and make a few key technical points. First of all, there's a couple documents I want to make reference to that are in the listed documents. One is document 40, and that is the latest groundwater monitoring results that were performed by Cleath and Associates. And then also document 133, which is a study that was done back in 95 by Metcalf and Eddy, looking primarily at groundwater separation and denitrification in the soil column below the septic systems. And we're going to go ahead in the interest of time and forward through a couple of slides here that talk about nitrate sources. Again, this is out of the study that was performed by Metcalf and Eddy. And I think the critical point in my discussion here is that one of the systems that the CSD operates and maintains is the Bay Ridge Estate System, and that was one of the subjects of study within this task that Metcalf and Eddy completed. And it basically involved installation of lysimeters, sample points to take groundwater samples above the actual groundwater elevation. But that's never been done in the Vista de Oro site, and so as I show the maps, you can keep that in mind. We did see some denitrification, significant denitrification, about 67% below some of the sites with adequate groundwater separation.
Can I just ask a quick question?
Absolutely.
These are issues that go to the part of the complaint that's alleging a basin plan violation, right?
I believe that'd be most correct.
Not against the time schedule.
I believe that'd be most correct.
Alleged violation. Okay, thank you.
All right. So, in again, looking at some of the nitrate reductions and the denitrification, we'll flip through those. And then we do have information that was generated about the Bay Ridge system back in 95, and those are on file with your staff also. Really, the key conclusions were that in a number of these occasions where you did have good groundwater separation, there were times when the leachate that was reaching the groundwater was actually a lower nitrogen concentration than what the groundwater was at selected sites. That being said, of course, it's very much acknowledged that there is a nitrate problem in the Los Osos groundwater basin. We did produce a map that might be helpful both to your staff and it certainly is to us. This is a map that shows an overlay, which I don't know that these two have ever been overlaid this clearly, the areas of high groundwater in the community in the blue, and then the areas where we took nitrogen samples in the last sample event. And then in the green you see the Vista de Oro system there where the mouse is and the Bay Ridge Estate system there with the bigger block over to the right and then the fire station. So you have everything on one map so you can really get a good understanding of where the worst areas are for separation and then where we took monitoring samples and the resulting nitrogen concentrations. The big point in the CLEATH study that was done back in April, again document number 40, was that the trend for nitrogen concentrations in the groundwater really does reflect the effectiveness of the prohibition zone and the prohibition against future construction, because since the mid-80s, when samples have been taken, the trends are for the most part fairly static. Within 15 wells, we don't see any long-term trends in that 20-year period. Two of the wells didn't have adequate data to make a conclusion. Three of the wells actually showed a decrease in overall nitrogen levels. Three of the wells showed an increase in nitrogen levels. One well showed an increase in total dissolved solids. And then three of the wells have trends that seem to have reversed, so you can't pull firm conclusions. And that's out of 27 monitoring wells in that CLEATH assessment. And I think that the point of all that is the prohibition against future development was effective at least stabilizing the nitrogen levels through that time period, but just the technical data that we're looking at, we haven't seen a discernible trend since that time with the samples that we've taken by the CSD. And this gives you, again, a tool to be able to look at how those nitrogen results factor into the separation to groundwater. So that's essentially the technical information that we wanted to provide here today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions, but that completes my portion.
Just so I'm clear, Mr. Miller, are you saying that the septic tanks are not contributing to the nitrate levels in groundwater?
No, I think I would definitely make the statement that over time, since the 50s, nitrates certainly have been one source of nitrogen contamination in the groundwater. I'm merely pointing out what may not be widely understood, and that is the actual sampling data since the mid-80s in that document 40 shows the trend for each and every monitoring well. And I think it's important just to look at those trends and understand that since the prohibition against future further development was enacted, we just haven't seen a sweeping trend throughout those 27 monitoring wells of increases in that time period.
Because the staff, Water Board staff, has put up graphs at several hearings with the orange circles and red circles and showing, an increasing trend of nitrate in groundwater. Is it your position that those are inaccurate depictions?
They did show a graphic earlier which shows a bar chart that has an increase. Looking at a longer time period, clearly in the 50s, 60s, 70s, when development was rapidly occurring in the community, we did see a significant increase in nitrogen concentrations in that shallow water. If that's the graphic you're referring to, then I don't dispute the validity of that graphic.
Right. No, I've seen graphs where the trend is increasing through time.
I think
to this date.
I think what you're referring to then is maybe that it's in a plan view and you see a series of red overlays on the community.
Yes.
that grow in size.
Yes.
I think that those would be a good thing to compare with the actual data that's been collected, again, and summarized in that document 40, and we can look at each individual monitoring well, and I think that would be a good exercise for the board to go through. But if you look at the actual sampled data, again, you see 15 wells without long-term trends. You do see 3 wells with an increasing trend. But just pointing out that physical data, don't know if that's ever been presented clearly to the board.
Do these wells correspond with the well data that the staff is relying upon?
I believe they do, yeah.
Okay.
And I think this would be a tool that staff can look at to analyze, and they may have comments on that document 40, which trended every single well, and so you can page through well by well to look at the actual trends in the wells. And so that's the information I wanted to present.
Okay.
I'd be happy to answer more questions.
All right.
Okay.
Any questions, for Mr. Miller? Okay. You guys have 12 minutes remaining.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to go really quickly, and I would respectfully request more time if we could because of technology problems and other things. Let's show the clip. As the clip is about to start, I'm trying to make the point that the TSO... Oh, wait.
...directed their efforts to Broderson, did not include those other sites, and you did that on purpose because that was the linchpin. That was the first thing that you needed to get done, and you needed to get the groundwater, the specific model, the finite model, to a point where it was usable. So you did that on purpose, and we've been waiting for them to get the wrinkles out of that model and to be able to adapt the same technique to these other sites. So right now, if you want to do linear leach fields in the other areas of the community, you have no way of knowing what the downslope impacts are going to be for those areas.
I guess my confusion is that we don't even know if the soils, what the percolation rate through these soils is in these different locations. We did this extensive testing that was used at the up at the hill to tell us we couldn't use injection wells. We have an idea of the soil characteristics, the water permeability, that sort of thing, which is real data. And I'm having a little trouble understanding why we don't want real data and we're just going to use a model where we haven't even looked at soil cores or anything from any of these areas. We're also using a model where we're using wells that are in the vicinity to populate the cells of the model with data, but it's a model. And I guess I'm not comfortable with using just the model without any field data.
I have a question. It's my understanding that the Vista de Oro leach field is failing, and that the Monarch Grove Elementary School leach field, there's a problem downslope of that. I agree that we've been asking for quite some time that we look at road rights of way, and I also am not totally convinced that the Cayo Cordonese, the ability to use that to get us on the other side of the fault line, it isn't something that we should be looking at. So it seems like some of these are appropriate and some aren't.
Yeah, and your board can tell Cleith which of these you want them to study. I think... I'm going to be brutally blunt here. And unless we can get some opinion as to what the downslope impacts are of the sites you want us to analyze, Mr. Clark can't complete his environmental impact report. So I don't care which sites you pick next Wednesday or the 21st, but somehow you have to give the information to your environmental consultant from a credible source as to what the downslope impacts are. And whether it's Cayey, Courtney's, or Santa Maria, almost doesn't make any difference. You have these various sites that could be analyzed.
But we're not doing any field work.
That is true. You're relying on the knowledge we have in the basin. You don't have time, frankly. We need these analyses done by early October at the very latest for them to be usable.
Mr. Chair, I have to express my frustration at this time. We have so much information to present to you.
Okay,
I feel like I'm
more,
rushing
how
and
much,
shoving.
How much more time do you need?
We need at least. I need 10 minutes, and he needs 10 minutes. I mean,
okay.
I just.
All right, hang on.
Okay, it's
hang
very
on.
Frustrating.
Okay. And I want to allow you adequate time, you know, for your closing. So. 10 and 10 and 20. Why don't we do this?
Well, we still have cross-examination before they're closed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I understand. I'm just thinking of allotting more time to both sides. So why don't I do this? I'll just give both of you, both sides, 30 more minutes to use.
I very much appreciate
yeah,
that.
That's
yeah,
fine.
It's just that we're rushing so
I understand.
It's not doing a good job, and we'd like to do a good job
okay.
for you.
All right.
So
is that enough time?
I hope so. I think it should be.
Okay, good.
At the rate we're going, it should
good.
Be okay. So thank
good.
You.
Right.
Why we showed the historic clip, why it's so important to us, and why we're so concerned about this hearing and this ACL complaint is this. We believe that the short TSO, the short amount of time that was given to the initial TSO in 2000, is problematic. Because what it did, and I know we've had some discussion, Mr. Jeffries did mention your TSO, whose is it? Well, we understand that many times the TSO requests were made by Mr. Buell to the board and or your staff to please revise the time schedule order because it wasn't realistic, it wasn't happening, we weren't getting good data before design. That's why we showed the historic clip. All the data, all the research for a good project came out after the design. So therefore, the design of the project does not reflect the goals that will meet the objectives of cleaning up the water basin in the best way for the best amount of money. The best use, you know, all of the things that you folks agree with us on. We're on the same page there. So that's the premise of these clips and the premise of my presentation is that the short TSO, the push and the shove because of your absolute frustration over time of not getting a project has in fact made things possibly worse because of that. Now we have a design that doesn't reflect the technical data that was produced after the design. And this list right here, this is a quote from you about how we strongly believe it is in the best interest of the community you represent to open-mindedly evaluate alternatives based on technically correct information. Yet all these reports that you see here on the right happened after design. Therefore, we maintain the design of the plant is so problematic, and it was pushed by the TSO and our board's absolute commitment to trying to meet it. Even though they asked you over and over again, would you please talk to us about renegotiating it? Would you please, we put a petition in, you know? There were reasons we didn't think the time order was realistic. So now we got a project that's the highest per capita in the country. We have huge division in the community. We have you coming after us for fines. We have the state pulling our money. And we're trying to solve the water issue. And we're very committed to that. But now we're in this situation that's actually possibly, for your consideration, maybe been made worse by this time schedule order crunch, squish, push. And so that's what I wanted to say, and I'm going to keep going with the presentation, but I just wanted to explain this. This was in 2000, February.
And Ms. Schicker, I'll stop the clock, and I just wanted to ask you a little bit about that. What is it about the design of the plant based on this data that is incorrect?
It's coming up in my presentation. I have a few slides about it, but
okay.
Yeah, I know.
Because
I'll go
doesn't the Tri-W plant clean up? And it's going to collect the septic tank effluent. It's going to process it. It's going to put it through a membrane filter system. It's going to produce tertiary treated water, which is going to be recycled and put into the Broderson site at 800,000 gallons a day. Are you saying that design would be different based on the data that you say came to light afterward?
Yes, I believe so, and I will demonstrate a few of those high points for you. We have great concerns about the design of this project. The task force was formed mainly to protest the design. We have great concerns that it will not meet the water quality goals that were established for this project.
Well, if it produces tertiary treated water, how does that not meet a water quality goal?
I will demonstrate that in a moment, but just keep in mind, if we're putting 7 milligrams per liter of nitrates back in to the mix, and it's going to take 30 years to fix it, and we're stabilized right now, is that a good solution? And if we don't have anywhere to put the water, because the Broderson leach fields possibly are completely undersized and will fail, and the water pops out in Morro Bay and Cuesta by the Sea, and we don't have anywhere to put it, or we're pumping it to the bay, which we promised we wouldn't, which is also part of the design, we got some serious problems with this design. That's all we've ever been about, is exposing problems.
Wasn't the 800,000 gallon per day estimate for the Broderson field based on engineers' estimates? Going to be producing about a million gallons a day.
That's correct.
Right? So there's like someone has already made a determination that the field could accept about 800,000 gallons.
Yeah, and we have
200,000 has to be dealt with in some other way.
I'm talking about that 800,000 gallons. We have serious concerns of the clogging of the fields due to the salts and then the liquefaction risk and also the way the clay is designed. I could go on and on. It's going to end up in Cuesta by the Sea. It's going to flood homes. We're going to have to pump it or dump it to the bay. We're going to recycle. Energy costs go up. It's a bad design, and it's conceptual. It has never been shown. It's never been proven yet. We're very concerned about that. That's what we've been trying to reach you for a couple years now.
Do you mean conceptual and that has never been demonstrated at this site or anywhere in the state?
That these big leach fields are going to work and not clog. And the liquefaction risk based on the neighborhood, on the FUGRO reports. Some of those reports that I showed you afterwards, you know, and the nitrate modeling.
All right, I'm going to go ahead.
To continue on, this is a letter sent from the SRF program in 2000. They were concerned about our project even at that time that we hadn't analyzed the cost effectiveness completely in an evaluation of project alternatives. They didn't like our project report. They have to be consistent with water management plans. We didn't have one yet. See, that's what I'm saying. All the reports were done later. An adequate cost effectiveness evaluation may lead to a different project altogether. These are State Water Board engineers. We agree with these statements. It just didn't happen because of the push. Notice another one. What's this next one? Yeah, quickly.
We have two representatives from Regional Water Quality Control Board here tonight, Gerhard Hubner and Sorrel Marks. Would either one of you care to speak to the probability of our getting an extension on our timeline?
Madam Chair, members of the board, members of the community, my name is Gerhard Hubner. I'm the a senior engineering geologist and chief of the Southern Watershed Unit, and I'd be happy to answer questions that you might have, but I believe the question was...
The specific question is, we went to ask your board for support to go to the State Water Resources Board and ask for an extension of our timeline, and can you tell the community the message that we were given?
The board at this time is not inclined to give an extension, at least that was the direction that they gave. They have asked us at the October 27th meeting to come back with them with various enforcement options. We as staff are working with your district staff and the consultants looking to see that we had a good faith effort so that we can come to the board in October and recommend a lesser type action. Presently there's a cease and desist order. We're looking potentially to revise that with some dates. However, we do need to see that the board is moving forward and so that we can make that recommendation.
Again, just another example of what we are possibly suggesting to your board might have been part of the problem with coming to a solution that was agreeable to all. This push, we asked for assistance, we asked for help, and we were told no. No, you don't get any more time. You can't do this. Yet we find ourselves in this situation today, and maybe we're all involved with that result. I'm asking you to consider that. Again, high costs of MBR at Tri-W, really high costs. MBR is a good technology. There's no disagreement there. They replaced the tertiary filters. We're unclear on the sizing. The capital costs are outrageous. The cost for electricity is out of this world. It's 50 to 80% more. And then if you add on that pump and dump thing I was talking about with the water recycling, you've got electrical costs. No sustainability. That was a big goal for our community. And you just held a workshop on it last month. We believe in that goal. We agree with you. We aren't getting it with this project. The MBR technology, these filters need to be replaced possibly every 7 years, 40% of the capital costs every 7 years. The O&M goes way up on a plant like this for a community of our size and the amount of people that are using it. We question that for that cost factor again. Here's a list, a summary of some of the flaws. Mr. Young, you were asking me why we think this is such a poor project for our town. Again, the technical reports came after the design, so the plant was not designed appropriately to meet things. The biggest ones, which you folks should be very concerned about, are saltwater intrusion and groundwater recharge. We don't accomplish either of those goals with this project. For the cost, that's not a good thing. Saltwater intrusion isn't addressed at all. Groundwater recharge, again, technical studies came out later, maybe 10% of the water will get back in because of the clay layers. It's not a good, the way we have it designed does not work. We're ending up pumping and dumping the water. So that was the next line about this. It either dumps water to the bay or we've got to pump it and figure out what to do with it. You know, we're not recharging and recycling like we wanted to. It doesn't treat the nitrate problem for at least 30 years. And again, we're putting plenty back in to mix with the existing. So is that really a good thing? We question that. We've got a grass-lined sewer overflow pit right uphill from the National Estuary. Everybody's saying don't pollute the bay. We don't want to pollute the bay. How many sewer plants spilled last year? We got this plant I'm a site planner. I have a landscape architecture. That's my advanced degree, environmental planning and landscape architecture. We're putting a sewer in a ditch, in a drainage ditch right upstream from the backside of the Morro Bay Estuary, and we're saying that's a good siting. I'm sorry, I disagree. Where is it going to spill to? Which way is the spill going to go? This time it's raw sewage. It's not effluent going through a sand filter. It's raw sewage going down the hill to the back bay that doesn't flush. We think it's a bad idea. The project doesn't meet sustainability goals. I've already mentioned that. Highest per capita sewer in the country. Disposal at Broderson is conceptual, dangerous to homes. Liquefaction risk has not been assessed. I can show you that in the EIR. I've been saying it for a couple years now. And the Broderson leach field is dangerously undersized. There's engineering disagreement about that, I realize, but we've done enough studies to believe that the field will clog based on the soil type and the effluent quality, and we will have problems at Broderson that we will be sorry about. And you will be coming back and saying and fining us.
When were those studies done, Ms. Schicker?
The FURO report on the soil type and the groundwater management plan were done in 2004 and 2005. This is an example that came out of the 2001 project report, another one of our big contentions, cost for the money. This is table 4.4. It shows that the Tri-W site has overall life cycle costs that are higher. The community was completely misled. If you wonder why the community is in such division about this project, the environmentally superior project was out of town, identified in the EIR, and it was cheaper, and that was never disclosed to this community. We ask you why. We've asked why for about 3 years now. This should be of concern to you as well. That's the difference in the cost.
Are you suggesting it wasn't discussed in the EIR?
No, it wasn't, actually. The life cycle costs and the
are you saying the Andre site?
Oh, no, the
Andre.
Was
not discussed in the report in the EIR?
No, the Andre site was discussed, okay. And it was disclosed as the environmentally preferred site.
Well,
and the EIR.
Let me tell you about how I view environmentally superior, things of that nature. I think that's somewhat subjective. I think if you ask the people that live out there in that part of the community, they would have a different take on that. I think that...
I know, sir, but just with due respect, the EIR, which is the environmental document that you're supposed to follow, identified it as the one, as the place. to go. So why did the community not pick it? That's the real question, isn't it? Why did the community not pick
that site? Well, there's another issue, Ms. Schicker, that involves feasibility, not just what might be environmentally superior based on certain factors. Feasibility. So, I
and
mean,
your point
there are pluses and minuses
Absolutely.
To the site at Tri-W. Mm-hmm. It's closer to the collection system. It's more centrally located. Mm-hmm. And getting out to Andre would have other, you know, pumping costs and things of that associated with it.
But
so it's a series of balancing of values that take place.
Another one of the goals I forgot to mention was ag exchange. That was another reason we thought it would be better out of town. But back to the ditch and the Esha and the bay and the homes and the cost, all of those factors, you say it's a balancing act. I would just ask you to please consider those as well. All of those things weren't in the EIR. That's why you noticed a great upsurge of people coming out at the Coastal Commission stage, because the project had changed. It had morphed. Now it's 40 feet tall. Now it's the most expensive ever. Now we got a drainage overflow pit coming out there. We didn't have any of that in the EIR. Those were new facts never disclosed to the community. That's why you have this dissension. That's why you have this division. It didn't come out of nowhere. It didn't come out of people not wanting to clean the water. I think there's a misconception
about
that.
Well, I'll tell you that I recall at some of the Coastal Commission hearings I was at in 98, when there were people that said, stop the sewer. There isn't a problem. We don't need a sewer. So, you know, maybe there's been a progression and a maturation and appreciation for what's going on with the groundwater. But, you know, the community itself has had many different roles in this. I mean, we are here today because of what this community has done, not because of what the regulatory agencies have done to the community. These are discharges from the community. You elected a board before. The community did. That board went through a process. It made choices, developed the EIR, did certain things. The community then voted new members of the board in. And so these are all, what, you know, we're here today because of what the community has done. And so we're not really here to start looking back in time at what was or wasn't in the EIR. It's not really part of a defense, I don't think, to what's in the ACL complaint.
With respect, Chairman Young, what I'm asking you is possibly, and other directors, possibly a philosophical question. That's what I brought up about the TSO. Please accept a partial role in this scenario that's played out. When you have an agency that's regulatory, butting heads with the community and putting the thumb on the neck of the people and saying, no, we will not revise this time schedule order, and you've got people who are trying to solve their problems, would you at least be willing to accept that maybe there is a dual role here and that maybe we could both benefit from some negotiations or mediation or workshops? Why don't you want to work with us, and why do you want to punish us?
Can I say something?
Sure, go ahead.
You know, if this had just happened, if we had just found out that Os Osos was polluting the waters of the state and... you know, you guys went through this process, and oops, this isn't where we want it. You know, I'm sure we would have been more than happy to work with you. This didn't just happen. This has been over 20 years. This community, for different reasons, has not come up to the plate and stopped polluting the waters of the state of California. And every time there's a project that's almost ready to get built, you guys change your mind. Oh, we want to do it ourselves, or we don't like where it is. And you continue polluting the waters of the state of California. So don't give me this, you know, change the TSO stuff, because we have, you know, held back in enforcing for over 20 years. You guys have had plenty of time. And to come to us at this late date and say, work with us. We've been saying work with us for over 20 years, and you people said, oh, yeah, 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 and you never have. And I'm wondering if you ever will. With Measure B, I'm not sure you're ever going to get to a plant, because I can see this very divided community voting over and over and over again to turn down site after site after site, because they don't want to pay for a plant. So this is very disingenuous of you.
Oh, Mr. Shellcraft. Mr. Shellcraft.
Please keep it down, or I'll ask everybody to leave. Okay. Go ahead, Ms.
Yes. Oh, Mr. Shellcross, I appreciate your frustration, but with all due respect, we had a conversation about a year ago in Watsonville. You asked me, I don't know why you want to plant downtown. You told me that yourself.
I absolutely agree. I probably wouldn't either, but that's not why we're here.
But I'm not that 20-year person that you're describing. It's kind of a generic person. You should have. It wasn't me. It's a progression. You are wanting to blame me for the past, and I'm telling you, I'm here to solve the problem. I'm volunteering as our elected representative. I took the ultimate sacrifice. I ran. You told us to change the board if we want to change the project. We did. We ran for office. We got elected. We're trying to work with you. We don't want you to work against you.
Let me say this. You know, I agree. If you wanted to change the site, your argument was with the board, your board, not with us. You and Ms. Thacker, came in here time after time. First of all, generally when you came in, you would start insulting us or bad-mouthing us and saying, help us move the site. We got really tired of it because we have absolutely no ability to move the site. We have absolutely no jurisdiction to move the site. So I told you, if you have a problem with the site, that's within the jurisdiction of the CSD. You have to go and change those folks if you can. You did. Now, does that mean that all of a sudden you get to do whatever you want? Does that mean you get to violate the Porter Cologne Act? Does that mean you get to violate the Clean Water Act? No. I think you could have had a good chance at moving the site and gotten some of the stuff you wanted if you had gone about it right. I think the thing that's really tying you folks up is Measure B. I think that's the killer in this. And I know it's not the board's fault, because you're sort of bound by it, but Measure B is what's going to keep this community from ever building anything, and that's what I think.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, that's what we're here to do.
Yes.
Okay, excuse me. Excuse me. You'll have a chance to testify at public comment. All right, Ms. Schicker, the clock was stopped during that, so we'll keep on going.
Thank you very much,
okay,
sir.
Go ahead.
We've heard several times that the group of us who really thought we could change this, who want to change this project, that you didn't have a plan. Well, yes, we do have a plan. We've been studying for at least a year and a half about which way to go, and this is the top of our list. It's not the only one, but we do have a plan. We've researched it. We've had speakers come into town and workshops. It's a multi-stage pond treatment, a high-rate modular pond that can treat the nitrates, and it can do tertiary treatment. And this summarizes what the components of this project would be: aerobic ponds, agnoxic ponds, etc. I mean, you can read them. But the main thing is that the timeline for construction was doable. The cost, the life cycle cost, was lower. We thought we could get more buy-in from the community. And then you know about these state negotiations we had with the State Water Board staff. They bought it. They thought it was great. They thought it was doable. I don't want to say they thought it was great. They saw the same issues we saw, the complications of site planning. This is how we entered the negotiations with Mr. Blakesley's office. This was Mr. Polhemus. Here's a summary of our results of some of our work. State Water Board staff did agree with our negotiating team, which was Vice President Fouché and I, Mr. Miller and Mr. Blesky, along with Assemblyman Blakesley and the State Water Board staff. They agreed with us. We had something that looked doable and less expensive, less O&M. So this is what we went for, and this is why we wanted to get the State Revolving Fund loan changed. So this is just a summary of that. The pond east of town would have had the 21, and the MBR at Tri-W was 46. So we convinced Mr. Polhemus that we had a doable proposal. He took it back to his board, and they kiboshed the loan. He came here with full willingness, and he told us, I have full authority to negotiate with you. I can on behalf of my agency. I'm coming here in good faith. We spent a week. we came up with something. So anyhow, this is a summary from some of those negotiations. I thought you might be interested in that. Going on to the plant O&M costs, it was a question that I think, Mr. Young, you asked about, could you break out the cost of O&M for the plant versus the ponds? And this data comes from Montgomery Watson Harz's work, 2003. It hasn't been escalated completely to 2005, but it's close enough that you could see and we could show the state that our O&M, which is really the big cost over time, is much less with the ponding system. It's about half. So this is some of the data that we presented in our negotiation systems that I thought you would also find interesting.
Ms. Schicker, how do those numbers on the right differ from the numbers we heard earlier?
Yes, Mr. Buell gave you the overall project, disposal and collection included,
okay.
And this is just the plant,
just the
and
facility.
That was the question
okay.
You had asked, I think. This was some summary of the benefits noted in the compromise that we worked out with the state staff before it went to the board. We thought we could get the collection going right away. We could address more of those deferred costs that I listed for you, the groundwater intrusion, the salt, the groundwater, the ag exchange, the groundwater recharge, and the saltwater intrusion. We thought we could get more bang for the buck, more water quality goals. We offered to consider sewering outside the prohibition zone. I've talked to many people as an elected who said that more people want to hook up, not less, but more. They can't do that with this downtown plant. So we were getting initial feedback that maybe we could sewer the whole town. So we thought that was a good idea. And, again, the out-of-town would provide for future modifications for treatment when necessary to improve water quality.
I'd like to ask you a quick question about the negotiations. Procedurally, you guys came to some sort of agreement at some point, and you went back to your board for a vote, and you agreed to it. And then I'm assuming Mr. What's his name? Paul?
Polhemus.
Polhemus went back to his board. And at that point, did they also vote to agree to it?
It actually went back to their staff first, and staff uh-huh. put the kibosh on it before it ever went to the board. It so never went back to the, his staff above him uh-huh. went. And I understand there were also some board members that were negotiating with Mr. Polhemus during that week and Mr. Blakesley.
Okay.
They were part of that negotiation.
So it never went back to the board for a vote. Is it your understanding that it needed to go back to the board for a vote for them to accept it?
What they told us at the staff level was that it was too risky and they weren't even going to agendize it. We had thought...
No. I'm sorry. Oh. What I meant was, would the board had to have voted to accept it in order for it to take effect?
Yeah, we had thought we were going to be agendized, and we were quite surprised, actually, that we weren't even on the agenda. And so we had thought for sure that we were going to be going before a board to finalize it, just like we had done with our board, hearings, et cetera.
So you know, the board never voted on it. Okay.
This is just a few of the benefits in the compromise, and then this is something that I spoke with Mr. Polhemus with, and maybe you guys can ask him that tomorrow. We have a clip. So this comes from the January meeting when we were going back to get the loan. I thought this has to do with what would happen if there was a recall and we wanted to change the project. This is from staff, State Water Board staff, in January 2005.
Come back. If you approve this $93 million loan for the project before us, and if the community decides to change their mind at some point in the future, they could come back and ask you to change the project, but you would basically then need to recommit and consider that, and that's at this board's discretion on how they want to treat that.
I know one of you asked me, what gave you the impression that you could do this? And I have to tell you, this was part of the impression. This is definitely...
Okay, but what I clearly take from that image is that it's within the state board's discretion. I certainly would not go to the bank on a statement like that from, you know, staff that the board has to do it. And I think I'd certainly want to be very clear in my mind before relying upon that he said.
Absolutely, Mr.
Yeah.
Young. And just so you know, we did actually meet with Mr. Polhemus for about 5 hours outside of the board hearing to discuss details about this because we wanted to make sure that this was a possibility. And, of course, he said it's a board action. We understand that. We're a board. We understand how that works. But because this summer because they knew about Measure B and the recall and all that before they let the money, we didn't really believe that after the election that there would be a change. If they knew about it before and they let the money out less than 1 month before an election, why would it matter afterwards? We were totally committed to a project. He knew that. We've been talking to him for a couple of years now. And he was totally, he knew that we were going to wanted a project. And he knew about Measure B beforehand. The board knew, the staff knew, everybody knew. So if they were so concerned about it before, that's the question we ask. Why did they let the money out? Because now we're in a bigger mess, and we didn't have to be. We were ready to go. We were ready to get to work right away. We didn't want any delays. We don't believe in the delays. We want to get it fixed completely. So, Chuck, do you want to do your part now? Yeah, really quick. We have a little more time. Mr. Cecinia, really quick. Sorry.
Mr. McClendon, you're down to 21 minutes of that additional 30.
Okay, we'll make this quick then. The community's been living under the threat of fines for a long time. This has always been a tactic.
I'm sorry to interrupt, sir, but could you please introduce yourself?
Chuck Cecinia. I'm one of the directors of the CSD board.
Thank you.
I've been in the environmental planning field for 25 years and deal with permitting and all of the factors involved with developing public works projects. It's always been a tactic of previous board to come to the community and say, if you don't go along with what we're telling you, you're going to get fined. And the most blatant example would be in July of 2005 when Director LeGros, I believe, came to your meeting talking about $11 million in fines, pretty much ask you to levy a fine, came back to the community and told us that if we voted to move the sewer, there would be $11 million in fines, even though he did not get your board to say that that definitely would happen. He came back and presented that to us as a definite done deal. Following Chairman Young's advice, I think this was given out at the Monarch Grove ACL hearing. There was a reference made that staffs should get together and try and work these things out before they have to come to the board, and we agree with that.
And I've said that many times.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You don't want these things coming to this board like this.
I don't think anyone wants to be here today, that's for sure. To that effect, immediately after the election, we formed a compliance team to meet with regional board staff. I believe October 6th was the day that that meeting took place. Unfortunately, it wasn't really very productive. We wanted to start discussions regarding the septic tank maintenance district, something that was ordered by this board back in, 1983, but never implemented. Why has that been overlooked? We could have been pumping the upper aquifer to provide a greater separation between leach fields and the groundwater all this time. It was never, ever, all these things we wanted to come talk about getting going. Maybe it was just too late because of the history and the acrimony between community and staff, and that's exemplified by this next slide. You probably remember seeing this in the past. Not only was this a slam at our community, it managed to rip the Coastal Commission, even took a swing at law enforcement. And all of this was prepared by a staff member who worked for Mr. Briggs. So maybe there was just too much poison for us to work together now.
I object to the slide and move that it be stricken from the record.
It's a fact. It was prepared by...
It's irrelevant. It's inflammatory. It was done by a staff person on his own time. It's already been investigated.
Was this somebody... does call into question the ability of staff to carry out the duties under the ACL.
Was this something that was marked as an exhibit?
Yes.
Okay. You know, it is a newspaper article.
No. This was a cartoon distributed at a CSD board meeting.
OK.
Okay. What is the relevancy of this?
It refers back to the ability for staff to work with us to be civil.
How is that relevant to the district's defense to the HTL? And perhaps Mr. McClendon should answer that question. I see it as irrelevant.
I could throw in one comment. We were told today that people normally come in and start working with us toward compliance immediately if there's a new board or when an ACL is issued, and we did that. My point being, maybe it's just too late. Maybe there was no point in trying to come and work things out with staff, even though we've been given that direction.
Okay. I'm not going to allow it to come in for the reason that there's probably been many cartoons like this, different depictions. I don't see what purpose it serves to what's at issue here.
Also, for the record, this was drawn by a staff person who was a resident of Los Osos but never worked on the project, as far as I know, for the board, and no longer works for the board.
So this was done by
Scott
a resident of Los Osos. Okay.
All right. These are some of the comments that we've heard today that we take objection to, that the current project is the least costly means of resolving water quality problems in Los Osos. We think we demonstrated, along with Mr. Polhemus, that that's not true. Pollution of Morro Bay and the groundwater resources will continue until the community sewer is complete. I guess what this alludes to is that once we build that system, the pollution will stop or somehow go away. It'll take 30 years if we're putting 7 milligram per liter nitrate water back into the upper aquifer to drop 1 milligram to get us down to the drinking water standards. We feel that an ag exchange program east of town, where we're not putting nitrate-laden water back into the ground, would be a quicker way to deal with the pollution.
Are the farmers willing to accept water like that in the winter?
I talked to one a year and a half ago who said he'd take 200,000 gallons a day in the dry season. That's
okay,
a quarter
of the winter is what I asked about. When it's raining, do farmers need to take
water? We would probably need Broderson, and we would need some wet weather storage. But there's a lot of land out there that would make storage ponds and that sort of thing much more feasible. Coastal Commission even required an ag exchange program. It's coming. I mean, they fought it in the Pajaro River Basin, the Salinas River Basin. It's change is always dealt with trepidation. And obviously, we share the water basin with the farmers. We're all in this together. So we think we have to work with them, and we hope they want to work with us. The delays are wasting millions of dollars. We think if we can deliver a cheaper project, that obviously would be fault. And thank you.
Did it again, sorry. Just a few more things coming out of the negotiation that I thought would be of interest to you. We also, in the negotiation and as part of our task force and elected roles, we believe in all these things to help immediately to help the water quality problems in Los Osos. Short-term and interim pollution control methods include leachate treatment systems for specific sites. We can relate those to the map that you just saw. Pumping for irrigation and ag exchange. Begin immediate pump down of the upper aquifer to allow further denitrification to occur in the soil matrix. We think that's a quick solution that we could start on right away. And then finally, additional well production in the east basin, thereby allowing reduced pumping in the deep west basin. We proposed all of these in the negotiations with Mr. Polhemus, and he was amenable to these as well. We want to immediately implement emergency water conservation. We want to adopt an ordinance and a program. As a matter of fact, we're scheduling another board meeting tomorrow night, Friday night, and all of these things are on the agenda. We're going to go forward with them nonetheless. We have all these things on the agenda. I encourage anybody to come and hear what we have to say. CSD signatories to the California Urban Water Conservation Council, implementing BMPs, ID the high groundwater leachate failures and fix them, review for possible collection and treatment, And then finally, we are committed to establishing a septic tank management district. And when I say we, I'm bringing it before the board and the public, and to begin by surveying on-site for implementation of AB 85. Just to assure you and encourage you that we are on it as far as the water quality, water conservation, and things. We have great goals. We're very excited to get going. This last 2 months has been pretty painful for us because we've been waylaid by the loan and the fine issues that we've had to deal with. They've taken a great amount of time, but we're not giving up. And, again, we understand the supplemental environmental program and projects, and we would encourage you to consider those for us as well. And we have lots of ideas about how we could get those going. And this comes from your staff report again in July of 2004 about how they work. We're familiar with them. We know we'd have some great ideas for Los Osos if you'd be willing. So that kind of summarizes my presentation, but we need to go back to Mr. Blesky to finish the timeline. So, do you need the slides?
Yeah, I don't need that
14
slide.
Minutes.
The remainder of my presentation is just going to be to make the point that we've used and exhausted any and every contract remedy to get the work going again and our commitment to doing that. You've heard all about the negotiations. That was a doable deal. That was a bilateral agreement supplemental to the scope of the original project. It's been my experience personally as well as professionally that there's only two contracts that can unilaterally be modified. One is no-fault divorce in California. You can't do anything about that one. The other one is DOD contracts for the federal government, but remedies are provided under the Claims Act. And those remedies for the unilateral actions of the federal government in the administration of defense-related contracts, especially in wartime, have severe penalties. I'm not aware of anything else that allows an agency to dictate terms that are out of scope in the form of a supplemental agreement that are mandated by one party in a bilateral agreement. That's for the courts to sort out. Normally that's done through the form of negotiations. Negotiations cannot occur unless both parties can agree on effective negotiation range. We thought we had that. That was removed. And now the SRF loan has violated the terms of its contract. We have issued there's a term that you're going to hear here. And when does construction start? Number one, the issuance of a notice to proceed. That starts the clock. What constitutes a delay? Delay is only the impacts on the critical path of the agreed-to and approved construction schedule. There is no construction schedule for this project, period. It doesn't exist. There's no baseline, and the ability to negotiate what are the actual impacts of a construction claim will be very, very difficult because of the lack and the failing of the consultants in charge of that to implement that project. I have never seen a contract of this complexity that allowed start of construction without an agreed-to construction schedule. The schedule was crashed from the beginning, front-loaded, and the only thing that you can say about it when looking at it is that it was to get the maximum amount of work in the dirt in the form of the ability to issue subcontracts and equipment orders that would bind the CSD through a form of by using, you know, accelerating the schedule in the beginning, which is ludicrous. You don't invoke emergency contract measures when you start a contract. You wait till you have an emergency. That was not done on this, and that's a very detailed discussion by professionals that would be able to discuss in detail. I don't want to go over that, but those are the things that we faced. It's my professional opinion that when counsel for this board went and represented a private entity without an amicus prior to and sitting at the table of a party that they were not, that this board was not a party to the suit, representing them constitutes a form of contract interference.
Wait, you're referring to Ms. Okun.
Yes, I am.
And who are you saying she was representing?
She was with Taxpayers Watch Group, and she was sitting at a table.
You said she was representing.
She said that she. Yes, that's correct. She said, no, she was representing this board there to provide information on a claim and a suit that she was not a party to. It's my contention that from a contractually related matter is that if I were going to pursue this claim, that the claim was purchased at that time back to the point where we used our contractual remedies between the parties to suspend the work to assess the project status. That's a remedy that is granted us. We've been denied that remedy. Secondly, there was a failure of notification because we had a conversation with Ms. Evoy and their staff that was witnessed by other members on a conference call where Mr. Moore's name was brought up as having talked to them. He is not a party to the contract with the SRF in this district. The SRF staff has failed in every way to use the required notification clauses. It failed to grant us a cure, which is instrumental into remedying construction deficiencies, and did not issue a notice, to show cause letter why we should be terminated. They threatened termination in the beginning, realizing that termination was not an option to them. They withheld funding. The funds were withheld based upon statements made by parties outside the contract and not through the proper notification clauses of the contract. This is why we find ourselves in a delay today. We have acted responsibly, and we are having a difficult time with the SRF, and they're kind of tying our hands behind our back and basically forcing us into a claim situation where we can negotiate this. There are tools available that they fail to realize. They're required to, especially if they get in the federal arena, because the money on this project is colored federal. Once that happens, and if we can get into that arena, then we're confident that we're going to be back at the table working this out. We have filed a claim. We have notified the district attorney about certain actions, and we have notified the inspector general of the EPA, and I've made initial contacts right now with the Congressional Office of Management and Budget, because these types of things really make no sense to fight when we have tools to fix. So the delay, in my opinion, I've been proved wrong before, but I feel fairly comfortable that the team on the other side should take heart, because we are willing to negotiate. We've proved that. We've had the rug pulled out from underneath us, and that doesn't matter anymore, because it's what we do from here on to mitigate these damages. And we've been damaged. Our contractors have shown tremendous faith. But still, they can only take so much. It's a tragedy on their part. And I'm going to leave it there and go with questions.
Okay. Let's do this. We've got, you have 7 minutes left. And we are at 7:45. And I said we would stop, and we're going to stop. And let's talk about when we're going to resume this tomorrow. Mr. McClendon, would your team be ready to resume at 8:30? I mean, we could also do it at 1:30. We do have an agenda that we're now going to have to amend.
Okay.
To continue with this, and so there's. I'm going to ask Mr. Briggs.
Sounds like
what's
everyone,
also doable.
It sounds like everyone's on board for 8:30.
Oh, let me ask Mr. Briggs, what can we, I know we have staff reports that maybe can be deferred to another board meeting. We don't meet, you know, every week or every 2 weeks. We meet about 10 times out of the year. And so to call a special meeting, which we do with panels, you know, is how this operates. So I think...
Mr. Chairman, we have folks who are planning on attending for other regional board business at 8:30 in the morning. I think it'd be preferable to take care of as much of that business as possible. Say by 11 o'clock, we can defer the status reports and the non-action items But I think we could take care of the bulk of the agenda and perhaps continue this item at 11 or sometime after that.
Mr. McClendon, would that be doable, Mr. Seitz?
Sounds like 11 works for our side.
Okay, good. All right, so we will do that. That'll give everyone time anyway to review their notes, think about what else they want to say and get into, and I think we will then resume with cross-examination by regional board staff.
Has the district concluded their remarks? It sounded like they finished up.
Yeah. Are you guys finished with your case? I think you probably are. You've got 7 minutes left that I think you want to maybe wrap up with your closing arguments.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow with that. I mean, you know, and if there is really something else that you want to get in, Mr. McClendon, other testimony, please discuss it with Ms. Oaken and Ms. Schaffner with me in the morning, and, you know, we'll take a look at that.
Just will Ms. Oaken be and your staff be involved in your meetings from 8:30 to 11? So I'm just trying to figure out how we can really address your...
Well,
your
for me, we do have the Monarch Grove...
Oh, do you? Okay.
...issue, which, because a panel hearing did that, the full board now has to adopt or consider adopting the panel's recommendation. So Ms. Schaffner is actually going to be involved in that and not Ms. Oaken.
Well, no, I'm going to be here representing staff.
Representing staff.
Okay. I was just wondering about the availability of us getting together with Lori tomorrow.
No.
It seems like it's pretty slim.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I mean, you have a couple other housekeeping items.
Go ahead.
We have three copies of the Cal Cities Record Index, so we can give them all to the district. If you and Ms. Schaffner want copies, we can give those to you now.
Okay, that's fine.
I issued subpoenas yesterday for the settlement agreement that involved Measure B, and I haven't seen anything. I don't know if that's here or
okay.
There's a copy for us.
Can we get a hold of that, Mr. McClendon? Was there a settlement agreement entered with respect to the district dismissing its complaint in Superior Court?
I did. Now that you bring that up, I do have a couple of issues with that. One is the timeliness of the request, and you know, under Title 23 of your Reg 648.4, it's the policy of the state and regional boards to discourage the introduction of surprise testimony exhibits. So I think it's at least fair to ask, what's the probative value of this? What's the relevance?
Okay.
Well, in terms of the timing, if the district had done us the courtesy to tell us that they dismissed that case, we could have subpoenaed the settlement agreement earlier. In terms of the relevance, a large part of the district's defense rests on Measure B, and this is relevant to what actions they've taken to perpetuate or eliminate Measure B.
Why don't we do this? If you can have it with you, and then we can maybe continue this discussion as to whether it should be used or not tomorrow.
Is it
readily available to you?
I would point out that, yes, I can make it available, but two, if it's going to become a topic of discussion, that discussion is not a matter of a few minutes. I think there's a fair amount of elaboration that needs to be explained and what went into that settlement.
Okay. Well, we'll take that up tomorrow on our clock. Okay, not yours.
And
anything else, Ms. Oaken?
Does the board want copies of the letters from Monterey Mechanical to the district and from the district to Monterey Mechanical? They're in the record. I don't know if you have copies.
Sounds like
packets.
Mr. Jeffries does, so I guess the answer is yes. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay, folks, thank you for being patient, and we will resume this agenda item at 11 o'clock tomorrow. Thank you.